From UCB Comedy Studios, this is the UCB Digital Podcast. I'm Nate Russell. Welcome back, filmmakers, makers of all kinds, to another episode of the Digital Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. Rachel Roderman is our guest today. Rachel is a producer and a writer and a generally awesome creative person with a hell of a background in all sorts of commercial and digital production. So excited to sit down and chat with her today about her journey. And one of the only people, and we talk about this in our interview, one of the only people that I know who started her career really in Los Angeles. And then, you know, when things started going well for her, moved to New York. So she did that reverse commute, the reverse move from L.A. to New York. So excited to sort of chat with somebody with a, you know, a different story to tell. Not these start in New York, move to L.A. people. Sophie's here, too. Hey, Sophie.
Hey, hey.
You're not going to L.A. anytime soon, right?
Not going to L.A. I did the old Toronto to New York, and that was, okay. That was enough.
That's a good change, though, right?
Oh, yeah.
And there's were you doing a lot of production stuff in Toronto, or what were you doing most of there?
A little bit. I worked on a documentary and in journalism. So, okay. So yeah, I was production adjacent, I think.
So you're sort of, so that was your big move, and now you're sort of situated here
now
for a while.
Now I'm planted.
You're planted firmly.
Yeah, yeah, I'm very firmly in New York.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good. We've been sort of talking on this show, you and me, about our Real Truth book club that we have coming up. The deadline is approaching, Sophie.
Don't remind me.
I'm making progress one train trip at a time. For those out there who haven't been tuning in, we have a maker book club that you can participate in. Our first book is The Real Truth by Reed Martin. It's a really handy guide if you're going to make an independent film. It's pretty thorough.
It sure is.
It's 500 pages worth of thorough. And we're going through it right now, and we're going to have our sort of like book club meeting. We're going to do it live on Facebook, Facebook Live, on August the 15th at 4 p.m. That's a Tuesday. You can join us at facebook.com/UCB Comedy for that. And, of course, the episode will come out a couple weeks down the line from there at the end of August on this podcast. So we hope that you will join us, if not for our first book, because maybe it's a little bit late to get 500 pages in if you haven't started already. You can pick up on the next one. And honestly, like, I think we're an open book to what to do next. I haven't really thought about it yet, Sophie, but
yeah, that's a good point.
We've got to start thinking about what's next.
What's next?
You know what I mean? Always. What is next?
Yeah.
Next book.
Yeah.
That's right. Of course, you know, we were even having a conversation internally here talking about things things sort of like moving on to the next thing and changing. We've been mm-hmm. talking about changing the name of this podcast.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, UCB Digital was a program that we were facilitating here that was like the maker program at UCB. And so when this podcast started, it made a lot of sense to call it UCB Digital. But honestly, right now, I think it might be a little bit confusing.
Yeah.
For people.
Yeah, totally. So I think, yeah.
So we're thinking about it. So if anybody has new podcast names for us, let us know that too.
We'd oh my God, yeah, users submitted names.
That'd be great.
That'd be a good
idea. That'd be so fun.
Yeah.
So we're toying around with that. I do like UCB Digital Podcast. It sets us up nicely for like the kind of stuff we're talking about, but is it a little bit confusing? Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Let us know what you think. You can always connect with us at UCB Digital on Twitter and Facebook as well. Follow along, connect with us, and also you can email us anytime you'd like, podcasts@ucbcomedy.com, podcast plural. We will gladly respond and interact with you because this is a show about making shit, and so we want to talk to other people who are passionate about making shit too.
Mm-hmm.
Would love to chat.
Yeah.
All right, let's dig into today's episode. As we said, Rachel Roderman is here. She's we're timing this because the finale of her digital team, who's one of the all-time great digital teams, Brinkman, their last video just came out, their last film on our Vimeo page a couple of weeks back. It's the fourth in an anthology short film series called Trolls, which is all about internet trolls of all kinds, all shapes and sizes.
You know them, you love them.
You know them, you love them. Some of you out there voted for them.
Yeah. Wow. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we this is a series that basically takes a troll's comments and then goes back in time and digs into the psyche of like how they got to the point where they were making some sort of trolling comment. So putting a human face on what is, you know, a kind of an anonymous and removed part of society, right? Internet commenting. Yeah. So a dark series, but also a very compassionate series and a very darkly funny series. And it culminates about a 3-year run that Brinkman had of doing some awesome work here at UCB as part of that said digital program. So Rachel was the senior producer for that team. We talk about the process of making digital content here at UCB and with Brinkman and what that experience was like. And we also talk about her creative and producing tracks that have brought her to where she's actually going on to a new position. So she's been at Havas Worldwide, which is an ad agency, for the last couple of years, and she's transitioning out right now to go be, I mean, she describes it as basically a show-running position, Sophie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know what the title is. I don't know if she knows what her title is, but it sounds like it's a showrunner's responsibility at Bustle.com, which is great.
Yeah, it sounds really exciting, even though there was not a ton of, you know?
She didn't have all the details yet. But it sounds really exciting.
Very cool.
Yeah, and like this, and it also sounds like she's moving from that agency world.
Oh yeah,
which you've done recently.
I also left a big agency. I wasn't involved in the production side. Mm-hmm. I was in the social media side, but her and I had similar experiences of the agency kind of imploding.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's definitely a weird time across the media business, and I think agencies aren't immune from it.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff changing. So,
a lot.
So good timing for her. And we sort of talked about how her experience as a producer, both in big TV commercials in Los Angeles when she was first starting out with College Humor and Big Breakfast, doing branded content and smaller stuff. And that's how she sort of migrated to New York. And the work she did here with digital, sort of like that sort of grinded out a lot of creative input, but not a lot of monetary resources, how that sort of like made her equipped for what is a changing landscape in the agency world. And that also now has led her with those with that awesome background in production to a place where she's taking the creative side of her and the producing side of her and marrying that in a place that is also now Bustle's comedy,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
It's trying to make a play towards like bigger content. So it's like it's kind of a marriage of all the things that she's been working on for 10 plus years.
Totally. And this episode is good for people who are just starting out and have a small budget, or people who used to have a big budget and now have a small budget.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good for everybody. It's good for everybody.
It's a universal episode.
Absolutely. And so fun to sit down and talk with her. We also took the time to sip a Bronx beer, as always, while we had our chat. We drank the Bronx Belgian style pale ale, which in terms of their pale ales, this one, they say it's a remarkably intricate South Bronx take on a Belgian classic. So European malts and candy sugar provide a backdrop for three distinct strains of yeast in a complex Belgian pale ale with a range of subtle flavors like bubblegum tangerines, smoky cloves, and bananas.
Smoky cloves?
I know. This is descriptive.
Oh, my God.
You got to give it to Bronx. They have some great descriptions of beer. It makes me, you know, my mouth is watering just reading this description.
Seriously, they make beer sound like a meal.
They really do. And
sometimes it is.
Sometimes is a meal. Yeah. This is a delicious beer. You can find it anywhere that good beer is sold. They'll have this beer. So think of a place. If it's a place that sells good beer, go there, pick it up. And go to thebronxbrewery.com for information on all of their excellent craft beer selections. Bronx, of course, the official house beer of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. All right, let's jump into it. Our conversation with producer, writer, and now showrunner, Rachel Roderman. So, Rachel, we're doing this in part because you guys finished the Brinkman series finale.
I know. It's so exciting.
But
finally.
Very exciting. But also, like, I was interested to chat with you because your experience does sort of span a pretty fun sort of, like, gamut of types of work.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like you're also in a transition period right now.
Yeah.
Which maybe we'll talk about. Maybe we won't. But let's start here. You're one of the only people I know who's moved to work in production from Los Angeles to New York.
I know. I did a reverse commute career-wise from L.A. to New York just so that I can tell people stories about what it's like to live in L.A.
So, like, were you in New York before? Where did you start doing production?
I started doing production very, very briefly in New York on a couple movies.
Mm-hmm.
I interned on 30 Rock during college as a PA. And then I moved out to Los Angeles after college and started PAing and worked my way up, eventually ending my time in LA before moving back to New York as a producer for College Humor.
Yeah.
So it went all the way from mostly production in commercials, like big budget commercials, with production companies in Los Angeles like Radical Media and Smuggler and Anonymous that are pretty well known out there, working my way up through PA to coordinator, assistant coordinator, and then had been doing UCB stuff the entire time out there.
Yeah.
And got connected with the crew over at
College Humor.
At College Humor, so it kind of was a seamless transition.
So you sort of moved from that, like, some of the bigger, that world of, like, bigger productions into a more nimble team.
Yeah. Right? It went, I started, my experience on commercials started with Jeep and Dos Equis and some really, really huge budget, big campaign commercials where we're, you know, there's like so much equipment on set. There's huge crews. Everything's like big union. We had a white tiger in a Subway spot that I shot once. It was just like these really big, epic days that we'd go out there and work through. And then cut to College Humor where you're looking at a way smaller budget. All the stuff is done in-house.
Yeah.
It's like more like being in a writer's room with people, and it's kind of like everyone's back on the regular human level.
So why make that change? Well, what about it was it an opportunity thing, or why make the change between those two worlds?
It was an opportunity for role growth, and also my passions always lied with making comedy as opposed to branded stuff that was in 100% being an advertisement as opposed to being branded comedy or a sketch.
Sure.
So that to me was always more appealing. I mean, it was always kind of in the back of my mind while I was doing production, and like fell into it because it's an opportunity that is very, very wide open in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
But also knew that that's what, like, the thing that I loved to do was comedy. And while it exists in commercial world, it was like a real opportunity.
So it gave you a little bit more creative input on the smaller team stuff? Or?
Yeah, the smaller teams are a little bit more creative. We got to skip out on a lot of the steps that you have to go through to get approvals for things. Like, we had our own small approval process in that regard. We weren't dealing, like, with a lot of client things. We weren't dealing with, like, you send an email to another person who sends an email and he gets an approval and then sends it to another person for approval. And we're, like, making changes at 5 in the morning. Because there's so many people to get through and such high stakes. And these were kind of like, not that they were less important, but they were just like smaller budget projects. And so the clients knew, and they were a little bit ahead of the curve because they were like, this is going to be for Facebook. We want this to be on social. It'll be on YouTube, as opposed to this is a Super Bowl commercial with a lot of people, a lot of viewers. It has to be perfect right now. So it was just a different stage. And I think that it offered different teamwork.
And but do you feel like, I guess, because it's interesting, because I feel like a lot of people go about it in a reverse direction where it's like the more small, like it's almost like the smaller stuff leads to opportunities on bigger projects. You know,
and
I mean?
I think that that's totally normally how it happens. For me, I learned so much being in a big arena and having all of those people around me teaching me how to deal with huge numbers and big crews and union laws to get to a set where I operated as if we were working by all of those standards, but we didn't have to be held to that.
Sure.
So knowing how you feed your crew, how many hours should go between a meal, that there should always be things on set for people like water and snacks and Advil and things like that that people just disregard because they're like, I don't know, this is low budget, just like go out there and work for 14 hours. I think were really helpful. Managing a budget and knowing what we had done and knowing that we could do it for a lot less has only helped me.
Sure. Yeah. And then when you moved back to New York, what was that with College Humor, or what was the impetus to move?
I was still working at College Humor.
Because they were still here when you moved.
They were, yeah, we kind of like crossed in midair. I came out here, did some stuff for Watch Loud, which was our sister company, was also started working on a TV show. The impetus was like completely non-professional move. It was like for a relationship that did not want to happen in Los Angeles and wanted to happen in New York.
Sure.
So I don't know if I would have left Los Angeles at that time if it was completely up to me, like career-wise, but within New York, there was no question that there would be a possibility to continue the work here.
Sure. And then when you got here, that college humor line of work, though, sort of dried up.
Yeah, that dried up pretty fast. As soon as I got here, I kind of didn't tell them immediately that I was staying.
Yeah.
So I was still freelance, always was freelance with them. So I was doing stuff with them, would fly back to LA to do some stuff and fly back. And then I was like, I can't lie to them anymore. And I was like, I'm actually staying in New York. And so there was a couple things that opened up, and then they really pulled most of their network back to Los Angeles.
Sure.
So started working as an assistant to the director of the True TV show Friends of the People, which was a totally different. I hadn't worked on TV since 30 Rock. So TV and commercials are a totally different beast. So that was through the writer's process of all the prep time, and then through a couple months of shooting and post, I was able to sit through all of it, which was awesome. Seeing how the director, who was also the showrunner, just go through all the prep time of that, go through shooting on set. There was split between himself and another director through the, basically like divided up into two blocks of shooting, and then and then through post.
What do you, so I guess seeing that, so what do you identify as the difference between those two processes, commercial and TV?
Between commercial and TV?
Yeah.
The time that's involved is a main piece. There's just so much prep that can go into TV, where commercial, because it's 30 seconds, I think you kind of, it's just going to be a faster process no matter what.
Sure.
Probably if you multiplied it by, you know, it's 30 seconds versus 22 minutes, it probably would even out, but it's a little bit of a different, in a commercial you are going through a story, but it's a lot of like, you hit key things of, is your product being represented right? Is your message right? This is a client's idea versus kind of in a TV show, you do get a little bit more of a creative story. Like, is this the funniest option? In that case, it was a sketch comedy show. So do you have the funniest possible thing we're delivering now? So it's not always what you do in a commercial.
Sure. And in a producing sort of like in the roles that you're in too, like, I guess, what do you see in the difference in terms of like approach, or is there any?
I think that really boiled down, it's a very similar approach. It's how are you doing it the most effective way? How are you getting the best thing possible?
Yeah.
How are you casting right? And are your, the way you're shooting, like what camera are you on? What locations are you in? Realistically, what are you outputting? And is it, how is it relating to what you're putting into it?
Yeah.
So I think that the setup is very similar. I think that producing through most of that stuff is similar. It just comes down to how nimble you have to be. I've been on commercial shoots where we just couldn't spend the money because the budget was so big.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, I guess we gotta get lunch again. And then I've been on places where we're like, I guess we have to go into our own pockets because it was so small. So I think it just comes down to how effectively can you manage budget and people.
Yeah, that's cool. And then so that sort of stuff, the college humor stuff goes away. You got some other opportunities that open themselves up.
Mm-hmm.
You started getting involved here at that time, too.
Yeah, right at the, towards the middle of that show, started producing with Brinkman.
Yeah.
Here at UCB, which was amazing and just one of my favorite things that I've ever done, especially within the realm of New York City, which was such a unique opportunity for producing and also for just being creative.
Yeah. I mean, that's like I have to imagine, and like obviously, like I think that the stuff that you guys did with Brinkman is all great. I like all of it.
Thank you.
And like you stepped in after they had finished that first series, right? Was it on the second series that you came in? My timeline is all messed up. So when were they making Last Two People?
Right at the end of that.
Oh, so
we came in.
That.
Yeah, we came. I came in at for the beginning of Life Support.
Oh, okay. So it was at that point. So they'd been cooking like we for hadn't. A little while.
Yeah, we hadn't concepted Life Support. So it was like through the after their first year.
So you sort of stepped into a group that had been working together for about a year, and pretty seamlessly integrated yourself into what is a lot of personalities there.
Yeah,
and that also is like they were taking some big bites. Those are some big production bites that those guys were taking.
Yeah,
and
it was,
you guys
definitely
were taking once you joined, like, you know what I mean?
It was definitely not a small jump. Yeah, there was no money involved aside from what we wanted to put into it, but it, when you jump in, and I got the vibe immediately from all of them that they were serious about it in a way that comedians can be serious about anything, where it's the commitment that's involved to it. So they weren't, it wasn't taking over anyone's life, but it was a big part of everybody's life in a passion way, and all of them are involved in the rest of the team. So many of them are in other shows and on other teams, and so there were so many parts of everybody's life that were, you know, taking parts of them away from it, but it seemed like something that they all really cared about, and getting to be a part of it was really great. And they had such a awesome workflow, and Sean and Dennis, who were working as the directors, had such a nice grasp on the team and kind of were serving as the leaders. And
sure,
yeah, it was very, mom very easy. Yep, mom and dad, they were mm-hmm. very easy to jump in with, and it felt like it produced themselves. They always told me that they thought that I did a lot of work. I never felt like I did a lot of work. They at one point told me, they asked me if I slept. I'm like, yeah, oh my God, are you guys sleeping? Like, am I the only one that's not sleeping? I don't know what's going on. But it was a very well put together puzzle of personalities and work ethic.
So I guess, so, and you got sort of going with that. Like at that time you weren't, when you got started with it, you weren't working full time too.
Yeah, right? The TV show had wrapped up and mm-hmm. then was kind of, yeah, freelancing on random stuff, started doing more of the branded stuff here,
mm-hmm.
And was kind of bouncing around. Was in a, for the beginning of that show, actually through filming, was doing like mostly post on Friends of the People.
Okay.
So was balancing being on set, looking at edits of the show, and then also prepping and shooting a little bit our mm-hmm. our show.
And then by the time you guys were making Trolls, which is the new
mm-hmm.
series, mm-hmm. anthology series, essentially,
yeah, it's like
four
shorts,
short films.
Yeah.
Yeah. By that time you were already in house at an ad agency.
Yeah, I transitioned about 2 years ago to a producer position at Havas, which is an ad agency, as an agency producer, which mm-hmm. is kind of was a lateral move in that I was able to translate a lot of my skills that I had on the production side into what is the agency world of producing, which is the basically the matchmaker between production companies, production ideas that are being written and concepted within house, and then connecting them to a client.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of people managing more so than
production
where you're managing a crew.
That's interesting.
So I have learned a lot. I had been there for about 2 years, so I've learned a lot being there. And my production background has 100% aided in my ability to understand what's going on.
Okay.
And if anybody was ever looking to transition from production into agency, it's definitely a route that I would highly suggest. If you're looking for a more stable 9-to-5,
yeah,
that's definitely. And I mean, you know, there's crazy days, of course.
Yeah, it seems like every time that I try to catch up with you, you're like, no, I can't do that. Insane.
I'm just making that up.
Crazy.
I'm just making that up.
I see.
No.
Okay.
It depends on if you're on. What's great is that now, whereas in production and production land in terms of the commercial world and making commercials, when you're a production company or you're involved with a production company, you get involved once everything is approved creative-wise. So the
yes.
scripts are approved. Now you can start concepting how and where and who's going to be in it and where we're going to do it and all that stuff. At the agency, you get to be a part of it once the client decides they have a general direction of where they want to go. So as soon as someone says, this is my product A and this is our general idea, what are your ideas? All of the creatives start pitching ideas and they choose when they go with. We usually throw it into testing for a couple months. Which is like focus groups of all these moms in New Jersey who are deciding mm-hmm. what is good and what is bad for television.
As they should.
And then once all of that's finally approved, which takes like a couple months, then we engage the production company, which is where I would normally have gotten into when I was in production.
In the workflow.
And then it comes back to us once the production happens to go into post. So we really get to see the entire thing, and it's like six to 9 months. To really be involved and see it through.
Was that a change in position? Like, I guess, what were you seeking in that? Like, was it for stability? Or like,
it was mainly for me a stability move,
yeah.
And kind of a question of whether I wanted to be on set, because I had always been on set,
yeah.
professionally,
yeah.
Or prepping to be on set, and so it was a question to my own self, is this something that you want to do or something that you're doing?
Yeah.
And so it was a change that way. And I think I've proven to myself in this that that is still my favorite part of being on set, of like being in a production, is being
on
there.
Set.
Yeah. The making of it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm all for making it perfect, but like the doing of it is what is the most exciting part to me.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just interesting because, and I also know that you have this other side of what you're doing too, which is like a lot of writing stuff for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a question of like, yeah, when you're sort of making a decision and seeing a move that professionally on this track you're defining as lateral,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Is it to give yourself more space to do, you know what I mean? To like let another track come up? Is, you know what I mean?
It definitely, while I was at the Friends of the People, I would miss a lot of RT meetings, or I'd have to Skype in while everybody was here.
And this is for digital.
And for the digital team, and kind of saw the things that I did in my life as the hobbies, as like the things that like let me be creative, not just make other people's creations a thing,
mm-hmm.
Sort of start to slip away because of the time commitment that production takes. And so within the agency, all of a sudden I started noticing like, oh, I'm like leaving at a normal time, and I like usually have the weekends off. Like,
yeah.
All of a sudden I'm making all of the meetings again. Like, we can schedule shoots for the weekends. Like,
yeah.
Things became a little bit more normal. So it definitely, in a selfish way, was a way to let me have the other part of my life that was more of a passion than a career, than a job.
Okay. So it gave you the space to be on set for things that you were more passionate about.
Yeah. It let me be someone that was involved in, I mean, I consider ad agency world the world of entertainment still. So it let me still be in entertainment without just getting another desk job somewhere to satisfy that.
And as you're sort of like on the other side of that agency experience, what do you feel like you picked up from? Does it feel like it was lateral? Did it feel like it was moving forward? What did you pick up from that you're going to take on to the next thing?
I think that it wasn't as lateral as I thought. I think that more so it was in a great place for me to take everything that I have without leaving it. So it just kind of let me keep all my stuff without having to sell it to transition into a different space, which was really, really awesome. 'Cause it felt like it was still moving forward, which is great. I don't ever like feeling like I'm moving backwards or staying in one spot. So the agency part for me, I think the biggest challenge, the clients that I normally work with at Havas and the budgets and the ballparking that I've been able to be a witness of and be a part of has been, and we've talked about this, on the track of becoming nimble. Like, that's, I feel like the buzzword in production now is like, how do you pare down and still make it great, but get there maybe with less people and less dollars.
Right.
And I think that that's something that I've got to see at a big scale, because they are still doing, like, the budgets that we're working with are still like far larger than, you know, these than College Humor or probably UCB would ever work with. So still getting to work on a big scale, but slowly seeing Facebook come into this and Instagram come into this, and seeing how we have to be a little bit more nimble and kind of play to the smaller, the smaller workflow.
Well, because you have the need to communicate on behalf of companies that you're set up for, and they're set up for communication through a media framework that is slowly crumbling.
Yeah, there's not.
It's changing.
It's really crazy because, and I have not. I mean, when did I start doing this? In 2011 is when I like really started getting into production. So it's been like 6 years, which is not a long time in the scope of the world. In terms of technology, it's just completely changed the way that things are happening and moving. And when I started Super Bowl commercials, that was it. It was still it. Facebook was like for college kids and we just didn't know where it was going, and I don't think that there was even video on Facebook. Instagram was like kind of a afterthought, and now that's the main thing that everybody wants. It's like, how do we get it on Facebook? Facebook is now starting their 6-second bumper ads that they're doing now. Instagram has their push-to media posts.
Right.
There's a lot of change in the way that people are being served media, and it's changing the way that people are making media. And I don't know if everyone's adapting as fast as it's changing, but it's definitely something that's happening.
So it feels like then that the agency world can, it feels like then some of your skill set and some of this, like that decision at the point where you went, go from the big commercial productions mm-hmm. into a more nimble branded content, yeah. lower stakes environment, is actually somewhat of what the industry is doing now and could use that skill set, right?
Yeah, I think that companies like College Humor and UCB that have gotten into the branded content are far ahead, are going to...
It doesn't feel that way right now.
It probably doesn't feel like it, but I think that it seems when we get these asks of what to do, that it seems like that's where it's all going, yeah. that everyone's like, well, can't you just get your friends and film it on your iPhone? And yeah. you're kind of like, yeah, I guess we could. And so you want to go out and like the consumer cameras are getting cheaper and the quality of the videos coming out of iPhones and consumer cameras are getting cheaper.
Sure.
And, It seems like the move to nimble is going to be the move that everybody is going to be yeah. forced to make, just because you're not making one commercial a year that's like aimed for the Super Bowl. You're making like 1,000 Facebook videos that are going to change every 3 days.
Yeah. Here's the part of it that I think about too, though, and this is where it kind of like doesn't jive. And I wonder what your perspective is as somebody who's been on the agency side of this. From a talent perspective,
mm-hmm.
from a writer and a performer perspective, there's a problem with that. And that is that to get good talent, they're all in the union,
mm-hmm.
right? And they also want to be respected. And the other part of becoming a more nimble, you know, advertising agency is looking around those shortcuts too.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, can we do this non-union? You know what I mean? Can we, like,
sure.
who are we hiring for this? And it feels like that the more that the industry pushes towards the new standard being we're going to, like, that Facebook and Instagram are viable places to buy media,
mm-hmm.
that the unions are going to follow them too.
Yeah.
And from a talent side, how do you continue to justify going out for a branded content piece that pays less, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That pays less when it's equally valuable to the brand as what the commercial was and still is.
Yeah, it's tricky because, and I think mostly that's the job of SAG, and they do a really good job fighting for their people. And when I started with College Humor, that's right around when the new media contract started for yeah. SAG, which was the very beginnings of how do we pay you if you're in an online video, which then I think was pretty much just YouTube.
Yeah.
And so they, whether or not it was had paid media behind it, so like paid media is like, it gets sent to you. It gets sent to certain people and certain demographics on purpose with a push.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like the beginning of the new media contract. And I have to imagine that that is just going to keep getting bigger and stricter, and those numbers are just going to keep going up.
Yeah.
I always really respected College Humor because they always worked union and they really respect their talent. And that was just a great thing to do.
Yeah. I mean, but I think that's where it becomes tricky, is that, like we were saying before, it's like the need is to have more content
yeah.
to feed the beast of social media and to reach those eyeballs and to have new content. But the budgets aren't necessarily like expanding to the level of like each one of those little things doesn't get even a proportional to what the big thing used to be or even still is now. But that from a talent side, or you know what I mean, to like still get people to participate in it, and even like costs of production itself, it's like you do start to make sacrifices when you go down to an iPhone.
Oh, definitely.
You know what I mean?
Definitely.
If for no other reason than like it's not a job anymore. It's no longer a job for all those people.
Right.
The production team, and that's, you know, that's a sacrifice.
Yeah, I think that if you haven't seen, if you're the person that's just asking for something and you don't want to pay for it, and you don't understand the value of having a sound person on set or having it properly lit or having, you know, I think that you take for granted when something looks and feels really good and you don't notice you don't notice it because it's good. You start noticing it when it's bad and the sound is kind of shit and the quality of the video is really bad and you kind of like throw it away. But you don't really notice it because everyone's secretly putting in a lot of work to make these videos look like they were shot on an iPhone. And, you know, there's billboards all over New York that say these photos were shot on an iPhone 7. And it's like, no, were they?
Yeah.
Those billboards are pretty nice. but they, I think that from a performer standpoint, I don't know. I'm glad that I don't have to make the decision for myself of, am I the first one that goes onto this viral campaign without knowing or having any guarantee that it's going to be viral? Like,
sure.
5 years ago, if you told someone, like, hey, we have a casting call for a Netflix series, you'd be like, I don't think so.
Yeah.
And now it's like, oh, that's all you want. So it is tricky because you're going to 100% get more eyes on you if you're on the Facebook campaign for whatever.
Yeah.
Hello, I'm Madeline Walter.
I'm Ben Axelrad, and we're both hypochondriacs.
I think I'm sick when I'm not.
And anytime I'm sick, I think I'm a goner for sure.
We're the hosts of Definitely Dying, the podcast that's a safe space for listeners and funny friends to talk openly about their medical dramas, both real and imagined.
We're part of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network, with new episodes released every Tuesday.
You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever else you love to get your podcasts.
Stay healthy.
So, you know, it's funny because we're talking right now, and like we'll talk about Trolls in 1 second, but I just want to finish with like the career track and where it's leading to, because it feels like you're again on another transition. The last piece of this digital team, which has been a part of what you had space for in the agency job, is coming to the end, and the agency job's coming to the end. You're going on to something new.
It is. This is my last week at Havas.
Wow.
As of this recording, and I am moving on to be a senior producer at Bustle, bustle.com, and they're starting a video department. So we're going to be doing some web series, and I believe they're going to be doing some documentaries, and kind of it's once again like opening up that space of, are websites going to replace TV channels? Is that like where this world is going to in terms of entertainment? So it feels like it. It feels like the people that I know that are in online content creation, that's kind of where it goes. Like, I watch all my TV online.
Sure.
I know it plays on TV.
But even if it's
I know
on
it's
a
there
TV,
at some point.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see what the content is compared to where it's coming from. So web series can come from where you normally are streaming your movies, or they can come from where you're buying your food, or they can come from a television in your parents' house. So it's interesting. It's interesting that there's so many places to get stuff.
Yeah. It's almost like you never are without the ability to get stuff.
Yeah. It's like everyone now has to make a web series.
Yeah.
Otherwise, what are you doing?
Yeah. And the stuff is on demand.
Right.
And, you know, it's funny. It's like I'm already an old person because I look at my daughter now and she's like, we're in a big Moana phase. Right?
Oh, yeah. You got to love Moana.
It's on constantly. Music, the version on Netflix. It being on Netflix is like the worst thing that's happened in my house because it's on every day now.
Well, that wave is so funny.
It's so funny.
And it's a wave. I don't even know how they did that.
But she's literally like at every moment, we get in the car and it's immediately put on Moana songs. And I feel like an old person because I'm like, you know, this didn't always used to just be on demand that you could ask for it and snap your fingers. It's there. But it is. It's constant that this stuff is available to us in every different station we're in life.
Yeah.
You know, I can take her anywhere in the world and just show her Moana because if I've got a cell signal, I can entertain her with that.
Yeah.
That's, you know.
And God, isn't that how it should be? We should all have Moana at our fingertips.
At our fingertips.
The Rock is so talented.
but so in the new position you're moving to, is it what's the impetus there? You said you sort of learned from being a producer in house at an agency that production's where you want to be. Is it that? Is it a great step forward? Like, what do you know about like what it's going to be, and what are you signing on to as the next chapter?
Yeah, it kind of fell into my lap in a way that I was not expecting. I was in no way planning a departure from Havas. I liked where I was and where things were going. And I was reached out to, and it kind of just happened. And slowly in learning about what the position was and what this environment was that they were creating over at Bustle, which is like pretty much a majority female environment, they have started building up the amount of people that are working there. And so it's the vibes were really great when I went, and I'm like basing it a lot off of the vibes, which is awesome and also really, really scary. It just seems like they're trying to create something for people that don't have what they're looking for right now, which is great, which is, I think within comedy, it's still a very like male focused place, and they're trying to throw a bunch of women into it. And I actually was thinking the other day while I was on set looking around at all the dudes, I was like, oh, I don't know that I've ever been on a set where there have been more than six women, and those six women weren't all in the hair and makeup department or the art department.
Yeah.
So it's really going to be really interesting to try and crew up like a majority female writer's room and a majority female production crew, mm-hmm. and see how it goes.
And is that what your role is going to be? Is
Yeah, I believe so. We're going to be
coordinating at that level.
Coordinating, yeah.
So it does sound like it's a step forward, because that sounds very cool. And
oh,
also
totally.
Sounds like a step forward in terms of like your responsibility level as it comes to productions that it also sounds like you're passionate about.
Yeah, it was pitched to me as an opportunity to maintain and exceed my creativity levels at this point and, you know, get in there and be able to be writing and overseeing direction and final edits and stuff as a job, not just on Brinkman. Like when it was described to me, I'm like, this sounds a lot like Brinkman, but like I get to do it during the day and they're gonna pay me for it. What?
Whoa, you figured it out, man. That's great.
So we'll see what happens.
So it's got a writing component to it. So it's sort of like, this is the bridging of all the different sides of Rachel.
This might be like the Big Bang of Rachel. We'll see.
The Big Bang Theory.
The Big Bang We're actually going to be writing the Big Bang uh-huh. Theory.
An all-female cast of the Big Bang Theory.
There's going to be one hot dude, and then that's it.
Yeah.
It's a complete reverse cast.
You know, out there, someone
write that
does
down
have
right
that pitch.
Now, right
someone
now.
Is it does have that pitch. It's like an all-female Big Bang Theory.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, that's really great, man. That's exciting.
Yeah. So we'll see. We will see what happens.
All right. That's awesome, and that's sort of like coming up right now.
Yeah, I'll give you like a. I'll come back in a couple months and let you know if I was very right or very wrong.
Please
about
do.
All.
I would love that. That'd be great.
Perfect.
Cool. So let's talk about Trolls, because that's also sort of like what we're timing this for. Like,
yeah.
Like I said before, like all this stuff has been great. So like, pitch me Trolls. What is Trolls?
Trolls, just before I even talk about it, Trolls started before. Like a troll was the president. Like it started before the word troll.
It started before anybody knew that Trolls was also a movie.
It started before Trolls was even a movie. Like this was, this took so long to come out that the whole world has changed. Although maybe we changed the world. I don't know. So Trolls is a four-part series about four different internet trolls. You see what they how they've been affected by a troll, and then what turned them into a troll.
Yeah.
So we kind of like start with their trolly comment, with their like really, really messed up comment or whatever their post somewhere online. One is in a Amazon book review, one is on YouTube comments, one is in on Periscope.
Yeah, if anyone doesn't remember Periscope.
Yeah,
Periscope
was also
was popular
a thing
when this when was being this. Started. Yeah.
Oh my God. So you see these horrific comments that normally, and we kind of concepted it. I think that Chet came up with the original concept.
Chet Siegel,
everybody. Yeah. Of like, who are these people that have enough time during the day to say this shit? Like, who are they? What are they? What would drive someone to be so mean when they could just be quiet and yeah. not say anything? And so, and Brinkman tends to be dark, run on the dark side.
Yeah.
And it felt like it fit. And we were also at the time looking for kind of capsule ideas, because Drew was working on The Gethridge Show, which was going to take him away towards the end of our process, mm-hmm. timeline-wise. Laura Wilcox was in the process of moving to Los Angeles, so we just needed something that we could kind of keep each of our actors in their little episodes so that we didn't depend on someone for the end of the series if we couldn't get there in time.
Sure. And in terms of, like, putting it together as a producer, like, you're overseeing you're doing these four productions simultaneously,
mm-hmm.
or sort of overlapping in some ways, right? And it winds up being a decent amount of content. Like you're making, like, each of these short films, none of them are less than 10 minutes.
Yeah, they're like around 11 or some of, one gets, I think, close to 20.
Yeah. So we're talking, you know, almost the better part of an hour's worth of content that you're producing for this.
Mm-hmm.
So as the sort of like lead producer on this team, like what's the sort of like challenge there, and what are you sort of bringing into what is a no budget production?
We
that you're doing
first,
on the side.
Yeah, that's just like everyone's side hustle.
Yeah.
The first thing that we kind of have separated off as the most important thing is just scheduling. So to get everybody in the same place at the same time has always been the number one priority. So we would mostly shoot on the weekends. And for this one, we shot each episode over a weekend. And that was the goal, to get it kind of, you have all the people that you need, you have the location that you need, you just like get it out in those 2 days.
So you were block shooting an episode on a weekend.
Pretty much. And then I don't remember if we had pickups here. I think that we must have had little pickups here and there, and like some bars or like some off locations. But for the most part, we had them. We shot in two houses and an apartment, and then I think Drew's episode had the most locations because it was like in an office and mm-hmm. in an apartment and out on the street.
And they were like fantasy sequences.
Yeah. So it really would, we really would bang out by location to make it the most efficient. And we, you know, we're using our own houses and our friends' houses and our friends' cars and towns that we knew. We could kind of leave New York if we needed an exterior because they weren't so savvy to what we were doing, and they don't get very suspicious when you have a camera and start asking for money like they do in the city. So as long as we could get the schedule set, that was really the first, that was really the first part. Second only to casting.
Yeah.
I think that's like, these series benefit so much from the community here and the network that we as a group had. So if we could nail down who we wanted as the lead or the co-lead for these episodes, then it was half the battle.
And your main casts were generally the people who were writing them too. So it was almost like you had that built into it, and then you're sort of building around them with whoever you can, whoever is right for it.
Exactly.
I'm thinking like notably like James III was really good in that one episode.
James III basically carried, he like co-carried. We did four episodes and Chet was in two of them, was like the main in two of them. And James, we knew that she needed another person. Drew was already gone
mm-hmm.
by the time we shot that one. And we were like, oh my God, an ideal world. Who do we get? And we were like, James?
Yeah.
James III? And
he's great.
And he said he wanted to do it. And so it was kind of perfect and awesome. And we sat in Chet's apartment and shot over a weekend. And there's like no windows in that old apartment. And it was just, we tend to only shoot in the dead of winter. So it's like absolutely freezing.
Yeah.
Super dark for our dark humor.
And but really it was four weekends and some pickups. So
for the most part, it wasn't a ton. I mean, those days are like,
that's a quick shooting pace.
It's pretty fast. Although those days are like really freaking long days.
Yeah.
We would usually get out in, for Chet's episode, we shot out in Long Island at Jason Shabiro's house, which was, has been a set for us.
It's a beautiful
it
set.
It is a beautiful set. That one comes with great snacks.
Yeah, that one in particular, like Dennis shot that, right?
Yeah, I believe
it's
Dennis
beautiful.
Yeah, it looks
beautiful.
Wonderful. It looks wonderful. And so we just like kind of lived in that house, and we all stayed over and just woke up early and kind of banged it out. And it's funny when you have a big budget, all of a sudden you're like, I don't know, there's just not enough money to do this.
Yeah.
And when you have no budget, everyone's like, I'm in, let's go. Like, it just gives you this freedom because there's nothing.
Yeah.
So you have a freedom to do whatever you want.
I mean, but it makes sense, though, right? It's like, that's the whole thing, is that if you tell people it costs something or that there's money behind it, they're like, why don't I get more of it?
Yeah, or it's like
no
once
money,
one
it's
person.
Like, we're all in it together.
Yeah, once one person gets paid, then everyone has to get paid, and then you have to start doing everything. And the only thing that we always gave everybody lunch. That was the only thing that we committed to, was making sure everyone ate.
I hope that most people doing no budget stuff know that.
Just feed your crew.
Because it is such an important piece of it.
Yeah, just feed your crew.
Just have coffee and food. You know what I mean? Now, in terms of like where you're moving, do you still have room or interest or drive towards the stuff that's like on the side, passion-y stuff? Or do you feel like this new thing is going to be both of those things? Like we said, it's the marriage of Brinkman and career in a 9-to-5, get paid, live the dream, have your weekends off sort of way.
Don't jinx me, Nate. I think that I would always like to maintain a side hustle. I think that there will never be, unless I was like producing my own film or something, you just never have no one to report to.
Yeah.
Like, I'll definitely have people to report to who might have a different creative view or a note that I don't agree with, or there's going to be someone saying something somewhere. I think that, you know, within Brinkman, you know, there was a lot of us, but we all had this vision of like, we're going to do the best work. And there was a freedom to it. There was a freedom to, like, you saw the stuff and we were like, this is great. but there wasn't a lot more critique than that. So I think the side hustle stuff is really great to just like really dive into what you want to do and like completing your own vision.
What I always felt good about in meeting with you guys about content is that it always felt like, and this isn't always true, and I don't know if you've found this in any of the sort of like producerial positions or any of the sort of like leadership positions you've had, but it isn't always true that people think about what they're delivering back, even when it is their creative project, more than you as somebody who's been coordinating but not directly involved.
Yeah.
You know, I can't tell you how many times I've seen things where I'm like, you haven't thought this through yet. You haven't fought with this thing.
Mm-hmm.
You put it together, yes. And you did some hard work out there to go through the steps of scripting and production and a basic assembly and edit.
Mm-hmm.
But to look at something and be like, why do I see the holes in this? And you're like, yeah, this is cool. You know what I mean? Well, you guys always felt like it was always at a point where it's like there was an answer for every creative decision. And at that point, it's really fun as a supervisor to be able to go, how can we just crank it up? You know what I mean? Because like clearly you've got a vision here and all I'm communicating is like this part bumped, this part, like your sound cue hit me weird. You know what I mean? Like, you have another option for this. Like, that's the fun part.
Yeah, the technical cues.
Your roles.
I think that it just comes from Sean and Dennis, I think, see scripts in edit. The two of them are wonderful editors, and I think that that helps everybody.
Yeah.
I find myself, I see things in a storyboard when I look at a script, and it's like, oh, yeah, well, this... how are we going to actually visually tell this story? And I think that you need to know that. And we went through a lot of work in storyboarding, and I know that it's always a really painstaking process to do that before you shoot. And I've worked with a lot of people that are like, I know, we'll just get it from over here, and we'll get it from over here, and we'll just put it together. And all of a sudden you're in your edit, and you're like, you know what we should have had? This one shot that we can't go back and get ever again. So the work that goes into that prep is just so valuable for everybody. And I think the more you envision it, the more you prove yourself wrong, and then you find the solution again. So Sean and Dennis did a wonderful job of doing that. And the writers were great. Like, everybody, we just, like, had such a top-notch team. It was crazy. It's crazy.
Good curve.
We should have, like, a lot of awards by now. I don't know why
we don't. A lot of awards. Yeah. And thanks for sitting down and taking the time to chat.
Yeah, I hope that everybody likes Trolls. If you don't have like an hour to watch all four of them, slowly.
Wait, if there's just one, which is your baby?
Oh, goodness. I think that Garrett is my favorite.
Yeah?
Yeah. Okay. I think Drew's is sort of the most my humor. I think that there are some shots within Chet's episode that are just like so gorgeously shot. Like, the overhead of her on the bed is like one of my favorite.
Oh, it's great.
James and Chet in
That one
theirs
too.
Is just
great.
Like so good. And they're all dark and weird, and they're all great.
Yeah.
They're all great.
Well, congrats on the series. Congrats
Thank
on the
you.
Next step. And come back in a couple months to tell us if you're still feeling great about it.
Sounds good.
All right.
right, that'll do it for episode number 56 of the UCB Digital Podcast. Thanks to Rachel for sitting down and taking the time to chat. And you can check out Trolls. The whole series is available right now at vimeo.com/UCB Comedy. You can binge them all or you can watch them one at a time. Either way, check it out. It's great work. It's dark. It's funny. It's sweet. And it is really top-notch shit. So we hope that you will check it out. Thanks so much, y'all, for tuning in. We'll be back next week with another brand new episode of this show. This show is for you, the makers, the people out there making content, working in digital media, and we would love to connect with you if this show has value to you. You can subscribe, rate, and review us at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. Connect with us on social media. This show is at UCB Digital on Twitter and Facebook, and you can also send us an email, like we said at the top of the show. If you have ideas for episodes, want to chat about making shit, or just want to say hi, podcasts, plural, at UCBComedy.com, we promise we will get back to you shortly. As I said, we'll be back next week with another episode. You can always check out new content almost every single day, basically, on Facebook.com/UCBComedy or Vimeo and YouTube.com/UCBComedy, on social media all over the place at UCBComedy. Until next time, y'all, we'll see you on the internet.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.